Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
NBA playoffs started out with a terrific first weekend for the most part, and here to give some insight into all of that is Brian Geltzeiler. He's on Twitter at HoopsCritic. He is on NBA TV and SiriusXM and now on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score. Well, that's the way to get some basketball started, Geltzy. That was fun.
It was a great weekend, guys. Really was so much, such fun basketball. A lot that was predictable, but just enough unpredictable to keep us all on our toes. Great first weekend of the NBA playoffs.
I kind of assumed that the Cavaliers would be in trouble, but they have all season long without being able to play any kind of real defense whatsoever, and they come up with an offensive showing like that. Just kind of disgusting. Were you as surprised as I was that was the issue despite LeBron's game?
Yes, 100%. Listen, my feeling was a second worst defensive team in the league the entire season. We hear the term all the time, guys, you flip the switch in the playoffs, right? Well, you know, the Cavs are going to flip that defensive switch and there's no power there. You know, they are not a good defensive team. What was surprising yesterday was obviously how badly they played offensively. I mean, you know, 14 points in the first quarter, 15 points in the fourth quarter. How do you get Kevin Love only 8 shot attempts? And that's a huge problem also. Thad Young did a terrific job on Kevin Love yesterday. They denied him the ball a lot. They doubled him when he got it at certain spots. And really, I mean, he looked only 2 guys with double-digit shot attempts on that team, okay, which is LeBron and J.R. Smith. And again, you know, you combine that with turning it over 16 times. It was a very, very poor offensive performance by the Cavaliers. But Love, 8 shots in 34 minutes, you just need to get him the ball more. And I don't blame him, but they are not running enough offense to get him involved. And Ty Lue's got a lot of work to do adjusting. But here's the thing for the Cavs is, you know, the pace and the tempo was at the kind of pace and tempo Indiana wanted to play. They played it slow. The Cavs are going to like to run up and down the floor so they can get as many chances for threes. The Cavs had tempo totally controlled and dominated on them. And I just don't know how much they're going to be able to push the ball here and be able to get that tempo that they want. Listen, it's only one game. I still think the Cavs can win the series, although I think it's going to be a long one now. But in watching what you saw out of the Cavs yesterday, too many warts on this team to feel confident about them going back to an NBA final.
Yeah, there's too many guys that have to make shots that I don't trust to make the shots. And LeBron is going to make the correct basketball play every time. But if Jeff Green is going to keep missing corner threes where everything worked just right to get the best shot in basketball, he's just got to make it.
Yes, and listen, 8 for 34 from 3, they're not going to do that every game either. They will shoot the ball better than they did yesterday. But here's where you get nervous for them, is because, listen, I don't think they played bad defensively yesterday. They didn't play good. They're not a good defensive team. And understand something, for them to get going offensively, as I said, they're going to have to get the pace going more. They're going to have to push that tempo. Pushing that tempo is only going to weaken an already weak defense. And you look at up and down this roster, do you have enough shot makers to be able to outshoot Indiana? Well, I'm not sure that you do. And Indiana, which is a team that has much smarter shot selection and generally plays a more disciplined game than the Cavs, this series is going to be tough for them. And again, we're talking about issues yesterday that don't even have their biggest issue coming to the forefront, which is the fact that they are a really poor perimeter defensive team. That wasn't even highlighted yesterday. So the Cavs got beat decisively in their own building with an anemic offense. Keep in mind, they're the second worst defensive. The only team worse in the league in defense this year was the Phoenix Suns. That's how bad they are. Wait till that part comes around.
Watching last night's game, you mentioned Kevin Love not getting touches. Tom Thibodeau's kind of catching hell for not getting Karl Anthony Towns the ball a little bit more often against the Rockets. And I don't know that it'll necessarily matter down the line in this series. The game was somewhat close in score, but James Harden was just waiting the entire time to get off and go nuts. He is, that series is, you're welcome, that series is pretty much done, right?
It's hard to say that series is done when Houston only beats him by 3 points in the first game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I picked Houston to sweep. I still think that's obviously possible. But I thought Charles Barkley at the half made a very, very good point about the Timberwolves offense. And that is the fact that when you get a team like Houston that is switching every single screen, and you have athletes on the floor like Butler and Towns and Wiggins, and even to a lesser extent, Derrick Rose and Jamal Crawford, who's still a shot maker. When you have guys like that, how are you not exploiting mismatches off of all of these switches? And the Timberwolves generally all game long did a pretty poor job of that. This is another team. This is the third worst defensive team in the NBA this year. I thought they played a pretty good defensive game last night. I really did. You know, in light of the fact that Houston loves to play with pace, loves to run the floor, and keep in mind, okay, that Houston led the league in three-point rate this year. The Timberwolves were last in the league in three-point rate this year. So there's definitely something that's got to be made up in the whole 3-for-2 argument, but they held the Rockets to only 37 three-point attempts. Rockets are a team that likes to be in the mid-40s. They're up to 50 sometimes. So, again, I thought defensively they did the job, but if you are not going to work harder on exploiting these mismatches on the offensive end of the floor, if you're Minnesota, you're probably going to get swept. You're going to go out early. And part of that is saying, hey, you know what? We have to get Karl Anthony Towns the ball more often. You know, Clint Capella had a super game and a great 20-10 in the first half, ended up with 24-12, and just was pretty dominant at both rims, and is an enormously important player to the Rockets, generally, obviously because of his skill set, but also because of what they have behind him. I mean, Nene is not a guy that really at this stage of his career is going to be all that impactful. And if you have to have one of them on the floor when you're playing against Towns, I think they have to really find Towns as much as possible. And the Capella keeps getting switched onto guys on the perimeter off of these switches. Take them to the basket. They need to make it a focus early in game two to try to get Clint Capella in foul trouble, and maybe that's Towns on the block. Maybe that's more guys going to the basket when Capella switches on him. But I would attack Capella, because to me, I thought Capella was obvious. Listen, you're not going to get James Harden off the floor, and James Harden had 44 and was absolutely terrific last night. James Harden's not going to beat you alone. You didn't lose that game because of James Harden's 44. You lost that game because of Clint Capella's 24.
There are a couple of really captivating Eastern Conference games, too, with the Wizards and the Raptors, maybe making me start to believe in the Raptors more than I should, because I tend to not believe in them. I think this team is different. And, man, when Chris Middleton, I mean, the number of clutch shots that were hit in that game, and I don't know really what's going to come of that series or how good either team is, but for a day, that was a game you couldn't take your eyes off of, because there's historic stuff going on out there.
Oh, yeah, listen, first of all, it was absolutely a fantastic game. And for Boston here, listen, Boston's tough. You don't have Kyrie Irving. They have Gordon Hayward all year. And they've really done a great job of figuring out what to do without Gordon Hayward. Tatum has been terrific. Jaylen Brown has been terrific. Marcus Morris has been absolutely outstanding. So they've made up for not having Hayward. It's obviously not having Kyrie Irving. But listen now, who needs Kyrie Irving when Terry Rozier is going to hit that three with a half second left, right? But, you know, again, defensively, they kind of break down at the end of regulation. The thing for the Celtics is this. They're still one of the best defensive teams in the league. Kyrie Irving is not a guy that carries a defense. Actually, it helps your defense a little bit not having him on the floor, even though you need him so badly offensively. Milwaukee, you know, keep in mind, guys, out of the 15 top defensive teams in the NBA this year, 13 of them are in the 13 of them are in the playoffs. The three that were not in the top 15 defensive team who made the playoffs were obviously Cleveland and Minnesota, as I mentioned, and Milwaukee at 18th. Milwaukee's just not a wonderful defensive team. So the fact that the Celtics don't have enough shot makers will not rear its ugly head in this series. It will rear its ugly head when they get to the second round, and I think they will get to the second round. I think they'll beat Milwaukee. I don't have a ton of faith in Milwaukee, and although they played a very good game yesterday and played with a lot of energy, and Giannis was great and Middleton was great, Middleton's been largely inconsistent this year, and I'm not sure you're going to get what you got yesterday out of Middleton in every game of this series. Fun game yesterday, absolute blast, and neither of these teams, I think, make a conference final, I'll tell you that.
Right.
But I also think it's going to be difficult for Milwaukee to win this series.
Pelicans Trailblazers was kind of an interesting one. Blazers made a move in the fourth and got it to a two-point game. You've got two guys in there, Damian Lillard and Anthony Davis, who are, you know, ascending stars in this league and looking to make that next move. Does a first-round exit for one or the other, who does that affect more, if at all, in both of their horizons?
I think it affects Damian Lillard much more than it affects Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis was in the playoffs 3 years ago. They didn't win a game. Him being back in the playoffs, him winning a game, and even making a first-round series competitive is a big plus for him. It's part of the next progression. Lillard's been around a little bit longer here. And for Damian Lillard, more's expected. He did more as a young player. The other thing is this is very interesting about this series. You know, the Pelicans have guys that can guard Damian Lillard and make life difficult. And, you know, Drew Holiday did a fantastic job. Antoin Moore was another one. He'd gotten C.J. McCollum's jock, man, did a fantastic job. Even Rondo at this stage will have, for short spurts, be able to defend one of those guys. When you look at the Blazers, how exactly are you planning on guarding Anthony Davis? I don't know that you can. And the thing is, you know, you want to put Aminu on him? Okay. You want to put Nurkic on him? He'll kill Nurkic. So they're in a very tough spot on what they're going to do about Anthony Davis. But again, just like I mentioned with the Rockets, where it wasn't Harden's 44 that killed you, it was Capella's 24. It's a similar situation the other night. You know, Anthony Davis will not beat you alone. But if you're Portland, your backcourt defense has got to be better. You can't let Holiday get 21. Listen, you can't let Mirotić get 16 with the volume of open looks he had from three. Went 4 of 10 from three, but could have made a lot worse. I had a whole lot of open looks there. So I think for the Blazers here, yes, they did struggle against the Pelicans, and I don't think you're going to have Lillard and McCollum go 13 of 41 every game. They certainly miss some looks they'll normally hit. But the Pelicans know how to defend the Blazers and can defend them pretty well. And I think it's going to be very hard for the Blazers to go back to the drawing board and figure out exactly how to deal with that. Because here's the other thing about the Pelicans. They're the fastest team in the NBA. They play with the most pace out of everybody. They ended up, and they tried to run a little bit, and the Blazers successfully slowed them down. They still won a game and dominated the game for most of it when the tempo and the pace was not one they're comfortable with.
Lastly, what did you learn from the Thunder and the Jazz as we had the first chapter there?
Well, I think those of us, and I say those of us because I was certainly a proponent of that, that will make the statement that this Thunder team is built more for the playoffs. I think that we saw that last night. You know, I didn't love Westbrook's shot amounts. I thought he took a lot of shots. I didn't mind his shot selection. They took it to Gobert in the paint. And I think if they're going to continue to take it to Gobert in the paint in that way, I think they're going to be in better shape. They also shot it very well from three, but they only took 29 threes. They had a very smart selection on three-pointers, and Paul George got hot. But keep this in mind on Westbrook. Yes, he did take 25 shots, which I think's a lot. Only four of them were three-pointers, and he had 9 free-throw attempts. If Russell Westbrook has more free-throw attempts than three-point attempts, that bodes really, really well for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I think that's the important thing. And listen, Westbrook understanding that he is not the main scoring threat on this team, Paul George's, come playoff time, is going to do a lot for the Thunder. I have felt all along that the most important factor in this series was Russell Westbrook's shot selection / decision-making. I thought it was really good last night, and that indicated itself in the score. The Thunder are a very good defensive team. They will shut people down. They bring in, you know, guys off the bench, and even guy like Jeremy Grant. Patrick Patterson didn't play much last night, but they get Corey Brewer's a huge addition for them. Got to 34 minutes, only attempted 3 shots. He gets out there and guards people. So you look at where the Thunder are defensively, and you can question, do the Jazz have enough firepower to be able to stay with them? I still think the series is going to be a long series because I think the Jazz are really, really good defensively and are going to have times they frustrate the hell out of the Thunder and that Westbrook gets frustrated and does some not-so-smart things. But I do think OKC is a cut above the Jazz in terms of being built properly to compete in the playoffs, and I was very happy with what I saw out of them.
Kelsey, always fun. We hear your voice, and it just feels basketball-y around here. And I know these are really exciting times for a league that is doing unbelievable business right now, looking at some of the number of eyes on these games.
Guys, it is always my pleasure. Anytime. I will come on with you anytime. We always do a great job with me there, and I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian. Brian Geltzeiler of NBA TV and SiriusXM on Twitter, at HoopsCritic.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.